I think that just as we're living in a nuclear age, we have grown so tremendously in scientific knowledge, it doesn't seem too much to say that men can begin to awaken to the fact that they haven't grown enough spiritually and haven't recognized their spiritual capacities.
Once something like eating is death, then you've struck at the very heart of life. The enemy of the older radical theories may have been the ruling class. But today the stakes of whether we will reform ourselves into a new kind of human being, a new kind of society, whether we will find selves worth being, the stakes of it are simply life itself.
I'm going to do something different today, and this is going to be a single session. I'm going to read from an introduction to a book by Athanasius of Alexandria on the Incarnation. This is an introduction by C.S. Lewis. I just happened to pick this book up because I was in the mood, because we're in Advent, and I opened it up and I was surprised to find this introduction by C.S. Lewis. And the first part of it is actually valuable for anybody, regardless of their religious views. It has to do with the value of reading old books, actually, and particularly classics of literature, classics of, in this case, theology. And, you know, tries to answer the question, why would anybody go back and do that? I mean, I've dedicated a lot of my career to helping people do that. There's a reason why I think that studying the classics, and sometimes very old ones like the ancient philosophers and ancient theologians, that you can get such a different and new perspective that it can literally change the way you think for real. And I think that in the first part of this essay, C.S. Lewis, despite his inkling status, which some people may be somewhat put off by, but others may love, C.S. Lewis captures exactly why it is a good idea to put these into your life. I will say that, you know, deconstructing Christians are beginning to get a dose of the church fathers. They're going back to their original sources, and this would be one of them, so that they can rediscover Christianity and decide whether that Christianity is actually worth their time. So anyway, this part, I think, somewhat vindicates what I do when I teach, say, Aristotle, which I just got done teaching an aspect of Aristotle's ethics. And people ask, you know, why? Why would you do that when so many other thinkers have come along and built on those ideas or refuted them? And my answer is, do you want to think or you just want to memorize? Or bah with the sheep. Okay, so like, not to be too blunt, but if you want to think, you've got to expose yourself to ideas that are different from your own, that were made in waters that you don't swim in. All right, so I'm going to share my screen. I found this copy of the introduction on the Credo magazine site, and I don't know that much about Credo. But they say that they are attempting to help Christians retrieve knowledge of classic texts. So in that vein, they seem like they have a good mission. But they just reproduce here the essay. And you can read all of it. You can find it for yourself if you want to. I'm just going to read the first part because that's the part that speaks pretty universally to why it would be a good idea to continue to read the old works. All right, I'm just going to read it. I'm not going to comment. I'm going to give you something to think about. There is a strange idea abroad that in every subject, the ancient books should be read only by the professionals, and that the amateur should content himself with modern books. Thus, I have found as a tutor in English literature that if the average student wants to find out something about Platonism, the very last thing he thinks of doing is to take a translation of Plato off the shelf, off the library shelf, and read the Symposium. He would rather read some dreary modern book 10 times as long, all about isms and influences, and only once in 12 pages telling him what Plato actually said. The error is rather an amiable one, for it springs from humility. The student is half afraid to meet one of the great philosophers face to face. He feels himself inadequate and thinks he will not understand him. But if he only knew the great man, just because of his greatness, is much more intelligible than his modern commentator. The simplest student will be able to understand, if not all, yet a very great deal of what Plato said. But hardly anyone can understand some modern books on Platonism. It has always, therefore, been one of my main endeavors as a teacher to persuade the young that firsthand knowledge is not only more worth acquiring than secondhand knowledge, but is usually much easier and more delightful to acquire. This mistaken preference for the modern books and this shyness of the old ones is nowhere more rampant than in theology. Wherever you find a little study circle of Christian laity, you can almost be certain that they are studying not St. Luke or St. Paul or St. Augustine or Thomas Aquinas or Hooker or Butler, but Mr. Berdyaev or Maritain or Niebuhr or Miss Sayers or even myself. Now, this seems to me topsy-turvy. Naturally, since I myself am a writer, I do not wish the ordinary reader to read no modern books. But if he must read only the new or only the old, I would advise him to read the old. And I would give him this advice precisely because he is an amateur and therefore much less protected than the expert against the dangers of an exclusive contemporary diet. A new book is still on its trial, and the amateur is not in a right position to judge it. It has to be tested against the great body of Christian thought down the ages and all its hidden implications, often unsuspected by the author himself, have to be brought to light. Often, it cannot be fully understood without the knowledge of a good many other modern books. If you join at 11 o'clock a conversation which began at 8, you will often not see the real bearing of what is said. Remarks which seem to you very ordinary will produce laughter or irritation, and you will not see why. The reason, of course, being that the earlier stages of the conversation have given them a special point. In the same way, sentences in a modern book, which look quite ordinary, may be directed at some other book. In this way, you may be led to accept what you would have indignantly rejected if you knew its real significance. The only safety is to have a standard of plain central Christianity, mere Christianity, as Baxter called it, which puts the controversies of the moment in their proper perspective. Such a standard can be acquired only from the old books. It is a good rule after reading a new book never to allow yourself another new one till you have read an old one in between. If that is too much for you, you should at least read one old one to every three new ones. Every age has its own outlook. It is especially good at seeing certain truths and especially liable to make certain mistakes. We all, therefore, need the books that will correct the characteristic mistakes of our own period, and that means the old books. All contemporary writers share to some extent the contemporary outlook, even those like myself who seem opposed to it. Nothing strikes me more when I read the controversies of past ages than the fact that that both sides were usually assuming without question a good deal which we should now absolutely deny. They thought that they were as completely opposed as two sides could be, but in fact they were all the time secretly united with each other and against earlier and later ages by a great mass of common assumptions. We may be sure that the characteristic blindness of the 20th century, the blindness about which posterity will ask, but how could they have thought that, lies where we never would have expected it, and concerns something about which there is untroubled agreement between Hitler and President Roosevelt, or between Mr. H.G. Wells and Karl Barth. None of us can fully escape this blindness, but we shall certainly increase it and weaken our guard against it if we read only modern books. Where they are true, they will give us truths which we half knew already. Where they are false, they will aggravate the error with which we are already dangerously ill. The only palliative is to keep the clean sea breeze of the centuries blowing through our minds, and this can be done only by reading old books. Not, of course, that there is any magic about the past. People were no cleverer than they are now. They made as many mistakes as we, but not the same mistakes. They will not flatter us in the errors we are already committing, and their own errors, being now open and palpable, will not endanger us. Two heads are better than one, not because either is infallible, but because they are unlikely to go wrong in the same direction. To be sure, the books of the future would be just as good a corrective as the books of the past, but unfortunately, we cannot get at them. So that's the part I wanted you to read. He then moves into his own particularly kind of Christian focus. He talks about all the various authors that he read that helped him to consider his own beliefs. But I consider what he said so far to be valuable, like I said, to anybody who's trying to decide what to put into their minds, right? I like the rule of one to one. For every one contemporary book, read one that's old. And I would say the most useful would be like prior to the 16th century, actually. Well, you know, it's hard enough for a lot of folks to read these books at all. And there I would just encourage you. There's no better way to make yourself a little better without very much money at all, if any. Most of these things are in the public domain. Than to take the effort to read something like this by Athanasius or some other classic work. Picking what you're interested in, what you're curious about, but there's no there's definitely no less expensive way, and it's mind expanding. And when one expands one's mind, there are many other things that can happen as a result of that. So I would just challenge you to try that, and particularly to try going back to something old. And even as Lewis says, if you find that there are many things in it that no longer are seen as acceptable, that simply by being exposed to the perspective, your understanding of yourself and your times will be more acute, and you will understand that many of the things in your time are not so much natural as a product of human choices. This is a very important insight for us. It is always good to become more educated, not so that you can go spout facts at people or impress anybody, but so that you can literally expand your mind. Every time a person does that, they become a little different and their experience of life is a little different. And that can make a huge difference in the long run to our overall experience over the course of our life and how thoughtful we are at it and what we do with it. So I'll leave you with that. Just a little gem that I uncovered recently and I wanted to share with you. I'll see you next time. Bye.